Hello and welcome to Conquering Chaos and Mayhem. I'm today's moderator, Breck Lover, and it's my pleasure to introduce the host of Conquering Chaos and Mayhem, Daryl Cully. Daryl, how are you doing today?
I'm doing awesome, Brett. How are you?
I'm excellent. Thanks for asking. We've got an interesting guest lined up for you today, Daryl, former deputy fire chief with over 40 years of emergency services experience, multiple award recipient, specialist in community risk assessment, and self-admitted dapper gentleman. Let's welcome to the show, Rick Monkman. Rick, welcome to Conquering Chaos and Mayhem.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure being here with you today. Looking forward to our conversation.
Well, thanks for coming along, and I'm looking forward to the conversation as well. And speaking of which, Daryl, I'll turn it over to you and sit back and enjoy this interesting conversation.
Well, Rick, you've got so much background and so much to share. So, you know, in one podcast, we kind of have to narrow it down to one thing. Started your career in EMS, ambulance,
correct?
Fire, volunteer firefighter, career firefighter, worked your way up, deputy chief of operations for Barry. And now you are, undoubtedly the leading community risk assessment guy in Canada. The reason I say that is I think we've done the numbers somewhere around 60 now, 60 community risk assessments you've done.
Yeah, we've got to be getting close to that or above 50 anyways. But yes, we're getting up there in numbers.
There's no one else in the country that has would come anywhere close to having that type of experience. On top of, the, of course, you're involved in master fire planning and everything else. But for today, let's just talk about community risk assessments. Why are CRAs important to the community? Whether or not, you know, in Ontario, we know that they're mandated, but across the country, they're not. And we see other jurisdictions adding them. What does a CRA do for the fire department?
Well, I think the CRAs really are essential for fire departments now because it really shows their shortcomings when it comes to fire prevention, enforcement, inspections, and then the third part is the operations of the department. It's really showing where they need to focus their attention within their community as well. They have the opportunity to look at what kind of buildings they have, their residents, the demographics within the residents, their hazards, planning what buildings are coming in line, and then they have to prepare the department for the growth of their community or their shortcomings they have now.
It identifies some of the challenges they may be facing, and then you make recommendations on where to go.
Yes, we look at it, CRA as a very high-level fire master plan. We make high-level recommendations or suggestions. Then the municipality quite often has a fire master plan that's the accompanying document that helps support the CRA, and the CRA supports the fire master plan. But we do identify shortcomings throughout the document. We look at their hazard identification, risk assessment, their critical infrastructure, their building stock, demographics, the geography. Is in their geography that's unique that others don't have. They may have a swampland that floods every spring and that risks other residents and people, and that the fire department can't get access to them because the roads are flooded. That sort of thing, it identifies these shortcomings that they sort of take for granted rather than focusing on them. Okay, what are we going to do to mitigate? Or if we have an emergency there, how are we going to get there? So that's sort of the idea behind a community risk assessment. Identifies where their shortcomings are, and then they can plan for the future.
And so, in the past, is CRAs, you know, they come out of NFPA standards, but recently you've done an EMS or a paramedic service.
Yeah.
CRA. What types of things did you think about or include in there?
That was quite a unique one. And I welcome the challenge because it's something we haven't done before. In fact, you mentioned that you don't know of any ambulance service or paramedic service that's done a community risk assessment. So we based it on NFPA 1300, which is the standard on community risk assessment and risk reduction planning worldwide. And it's respected throughout the fire industry is the NFPA standard. So we use 1300 as a basis for looking at the paramedic community risk assessment. So there's 9 areas that we have to look at. Like I mentioned, there's geography, demographics, building stock, the HIRA, hazard identification risk assessment, critical infrastructure, demographics, hazards such as tornadoes, windstorms, thunderstorms, that sort of thing. And then we then differentiate or highlight what we found are the shortcomings within each, I'll call them a worksheet, that we look at. And then you make up the main body of the document based on our findings on the other worksheets. So it was quite challenging. So with the paramedics, I looked at the response times, past history, service provision, their community service provision that they have, so community health, their vehicles, looked at their AML stations, their locations of their stations, made recommendations for where new stations could be. But at the same time, we were working on a companion document for a master plan for the paramedic service. So as I mentioned before, the community risk assessment for the paramedic service complemented the master plan for the paramedic service. So they really worked hand in hand. Now, there was other gentlemen working on the master plan, and I really didn't work on it, but we worked together on the two documents. They shared information I had information I shared with them. And then I shared with them the draft master or community risk assessment. They gave it the thumbs up and made some recommendations. And then we went from there. And a lot of what was in the CRA was incorporated into the master plan. So it really was a good challenge and a new avenue I think we could look at for other services that maybe have never thought of doing such a thing before.
Right, because there's risk in all of those first response organizations, whether it's policing, fire, EMS. Now, I had a fire department call me last week, and they said, oh, well, we've done our simplified risk assessment. We think this is going to cover it. Well, what's the difference between the simplified risk assessment and the CRA, the community risk assessment?
Well, really, the simplified risk assessment was an early form of a community risk assessment. But it was prior to the NFPA 1300 coming online, which came in line in 2020. So the simplified risk assessments, I'm going to date myself back to the mid-2000s, around 2006 to 2014, they became quite popular, and the OFM was pushing them at that time. Not pushing, promoting them. And they were saying municipalities need to complete them. A lot of the areas that it looked at, such as demographics, building stock, geography, the HIRA, critical infrastructure was included into it, but not to the depth that they're now asking that the CRAs be looked at. So it was the early form of a CRA, but it does not near cover as much information or as in depth as what an actual CRA is. The OFM and their regulations have made it pretty strongly worded that it's suggested that whoever does their CRA needs to do it based on their templates. So they provided templates. That's your basis of work, conversely, your baseline. Then all you do is fill in the blanks. And there have been some that have not followed that. I helter to scale, gather what the OFM may think about that. But they are a good guideline, and they helped give me direction on what I need to look at, because it sort of answers some questions and it promotes more questions I haven't thought of before.
And you're going into quite the depth. I mean, some of the reports, CRAs you've done have been 150, 200 or more pages of data and information. And the key part of that is not really just the data, but it's about taking that data and applying it.
That's an excellent point. There's one final piece to having a community risk assessment, and that's the development of a community risk reduction plan. That is the final piece that makes everything fit together. And unfortunately, what I've seen is a lot of municipalities, when they get their CRA, are putting them on the shelf, saying, we've got it, and they don't do any more with it. NFPA 1300 has a community risk reduction plan guideline in there as to what you need to do to develop it. And it's not uncommon that departments have not bothered even looking into developing a community risk reduction plan. So I made sure that we did incorporate that into the CRAs. to speak on the plans, how to develop them, who should be involved in them, and what they should be looking at. And a lot of municipalities and fire departments have not taken that extra step because it's sort of incomplete by not doing that. So they need to follow up and finish that part of it. Now, having said that, yes, there will be funding, and yes, there will be a lot of meetings, and yes, it's going to take some time. I was talking to NFPA yesterday, in fact, and they were saying it could take a year or two to develop a proper plan and start implementing it. So it's not a five-minute job to put a plan together. You can't just look at the CRA and say, this is what we're going to do, because you need to involve stakeholders from the community. You need to be budgeting. You need to have the plan approved by the fire department. You need the plan approved by council so they support it. So there's a lot of little pieces that have to be in place and aligned before the plan can actually be implemented. And then afterwards, it's no good just to implement it. You need to evaluate it, improve it. What do you need to incorporate to make it more enhanced and more fulfilled for the community? So there could be also changing needs and circumstances within the community that's going to cause the need to reevaluate the plan and make changes accordingly.
This is the interesting thing now that you refer to OFM, the Ontario Fire Marshal's Office, has mandated the CRAs. It's provincial legislation. But it doesn't mandate that risk reduction plan. But it's the onus is on the fire department to take the information they have and to make it practical for their community.
Yes, you're so true on that. Unfortunately, when the OFM made the regulation, they spoke of how to make the CRA, but they don't address what to do when it's completed. And that is missing in the document. And the regulation 378.18 is an amendment to the Fire Protection Prevention Act. And unfortunately, it does not speak to what do you do after. Whereas when we started doing ours, this is something I found out and did more research, and I thought, we're missing that part. And that's what makes everything fit together. So that's why we are incorporating the plan into it. But in speaking to NFPA yesterday, a lot of municipalities in Ontario are missing that portion of the document. If they follow NFPA 1300, which a lot of Ontario don't because they have to follow the regulation, it doesn't speak to that. So unfortunately, that's being missed by a lot of municipalities.
And I'm sure after seeing 50 or 60 CRAs, you've seen some pretty unique things in some communities. What, give me an example of something that maybe in the beginning wouldn't have been on the radar, and then all of a sudden in some community, it was a realization that, hey, this might be a unique risk or something. What's one of those unusual ones you've seen?
One that just comes to light rather quickly is a power generation dam in a location I won't name. But they had no plan that if the dam failed, what would happen or how do they notify their residents that the dam is in compromised position and could fail? They had no plan in place how they're going to notify their residents that they moved to higher ground. They did know that if the dam failed, the whole downtown core of their community was going to be wiped out. They already knew that because the level of the municipality compared to the water table and where the river was down below the copious amount of water that's behind the dam. So if that failed, all this rushing water comes down. So how do they notify people that are in the river fishing? How do they notify the residents they need to go to higher ground? How do they start getting emergency services in place? They're a very remote location to begin with. And so there's a lot of things we're missing. So when I started raising the questions, you could see this, for the lack of terms, a deer in the headlights look on the department because it was something they never thought of. So what I incorporated in is, okay, the first thing is how do we notify? So I brought up the issue of storm sirens, such as the United States has for tornadoes, text messaging, alerts on their website, that sort of thing is how do you get the word out that the dam is becoming compromised and it could fail? So you need an early warning device or procedure plan in place ahead of time. So you need a strategy. And that's what's lacking a lot of places is they don't think outside the box. They focus so much on fires, but there's more to the emergency in the communities that they miss. Yourself, you've got a history with emergency planning. You know what some of the things they miss. But when this being so focused on fire departments, they think of fires. Okay, if I have a fire, what am I going to do? Yeah, but you have other emergencies that happen too. You have technical rescues. You have confined space rescue, trench rescue, building collapses. If you have a building collapse, what are you going to do? But anyways, having said that, getting back to this one, if they had the rush of water going downtown, they are going to have structural damage. They are going to have buildings collapse. Who are they going to call to help out? So this all had to be part of their plan, or what they had to get in place was a strategy and a mitigation strategy. Okay, who are we going to call? Where's these resources going to come from? As an example, where they were for handling, say, a trench rescue, which is a hole in the ground that collapses in on top of somebody, the closest resource was 4 hours away by air in another country. So you can understand the red tape they would have to go through before they would ever get a response from that municipality to come and help them, and not to mention flying all this equipment in. So you're probably looking at 24 hours or greater before they would even see any resources show up. So that's part of why we need to have a good strategy in place and emergency planning.
And it's interesting, and I'll just use your example of a dam, is that we just assume, hey, it's a big structure, it's built to hold the water, it's going to be there forever. What we don't often remember is that a lot of these were started to be built 100 years ago, and they were just soil piled on top of soil. And then, you know, there might be some padding, you know, cement, concrete, or whatever put on top more recently. But the underlying infrastructure is a century old. And, you know, there are risks. It might not have happened in the last 100 years, but that doesn't mean that, you know, there aren't risks.
And that's so true. That speaks to the advancements in engineering, the reinforcement that goes into building a dam now, the thought process they go into that, okay, they have the floodgates. I'll use that the gates, they can control the water. So if the water level is getting too high, or if they find that there is a compromise or there's cracks or, heaven forbid, a potential failure, they could start releasing the water in a controlled manner in advance to reduce the risk and reduce the harm downstream. So yes, the advancement in engineering has made a big difference. But who, having said that, there's still man-made dams or ponds that have been failed, sluices. We heard of a massive one up in northern Canada that released a few years ago at a mining location where all their water off runoff for part of the mining released from a dam wall that breached. So the levee let go. Look at New Orleans during Katrina. They never thought those levees would be compromised. Who made them? U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. It happens. But you got to look at the extreme situation. Like municipalities never think of the 100-year storm coming. And the 100-year storm is once in a lifetime, such as Fort Lauderdale just went through, where they got a foot of rain in a matter of an afternoon. Where do you put a foot of rain? Something's going to give, and there's going to be a lot of damage.
Yeah. And climate change is adding to these, you know, we used to call them once in 100 years, but that 100 years may now be once in 20 years and even more frequent. So obviously then the community risk assessment needs to continue to evolve. You don't just do it once and you're done.
That's correct. It's supposed to come off the shelf every year and be reviewed and updated. That's in the legislature. After 5 years, you're supposed to complete a complete new one or have a new one completed. That way, at least they're updated and they're current, because you raise a very good point about climate change. That is something we in the fire service don't think about. But now I'm actually incorporating a section in the community risk assessment on climate change where I talk about backflow valves in houses to prevent sewage backups, sump pumps, proper irrigator, water flow from buildings. Okay, so grading, stuff like this, or there's different topics that the fire department could promote during inspections to help businesses and corporations be prepared for climate change. And a lot of municipalities are now taking it quite seriously and developing a climate change strategy as to how they're going to happen. And they're incorporating the fire department as part of the program. So it's going to be an interesting times again. It sort of speaks to the evolution of what's going on.
And so the fire department has also evolved. And we use that term fire department, but today it's an all hazards department in many communities. And so they need to really partner with other internal agencies within the municipality, like planning, and be more active, maybe more vocal. What's your thoughts?
That's a good point. One of the things that the OFM has brought in effective 2022 in the directive was that municipalities have to have an accurate building stock of every type of occupancy within their municipality. And then within that, they have to identify every one of them that incorporated lightweight construction. The reason lightweight construction is, think of your roof rafters with the gusset plates that hold it together, they will fail rather quickly within 15 to 20 minutes of flame impingement. When that collapses and people are inside the structure, they're going to be trapped if not killed. So that's something they've incorporated, that you have to have a running building stock. Well, the only way you can get that building stock is that building has to identify the occupancies based on the building permits issued. Then you also have to use finance to get involved to help calculate your numbers. And we use MPAC, which is Municipal Property Assessment Corporation. That is your tax assessment. They break down every property into the type of property it is. So then we use that as a backup to support what they've got from using the building department. So building then has to work with planning, who will help identify new developments and what's going in that development. Is it single detached residential? Is it semi-detached? Is it multi-unit like an apartment building? Is it industrial? Is it commercial? Is it a strip mall? So all of those things have to be identified now. And this is now going to put a lot of onus on the municipalities that, okay, you can't stay within your own silo. The silos have to come down. And we have to start working together as a team in sharing the information, because in the past, even to get fire prevention to gain access to the building department's computer program, there's different ones out there, that would give them access to the building structure, like the building permits and so on, and what it's made of and the components of it. Whereas that was never, access was never allowed in the past, where now they're starting to let the walls come down and they're starting to share this information because it's being identified, they need to. So it's going to take time. It's not going to happen overnight, but again, we're trying to identify that they need to start working cooperatively.
Awesome. Closing remark, what would you recommend to a fire chief that's now got this CRA in front of them, whether they did it internally or they brought in an expert like you to do it. They've got this plan. What do they need to do next? What's their next step?
I think they need to evaluate it, evaluate their department, bring reports to council based on the fire master plan as well. Tell them what they need to know, what is the good, what is the bad, where's the exposures. Come up with a strategy. Just don't walk into council and say, we've got a problem and this is the problem. Bring a strategy in how you're going to fix the problem. There's no good, it's not a good plan to come forward and just say, all of this is wrong, and plunk it on council's plate to say, now you fix it. Come in with a strategy. If you're short staff, I'm short staff in fire prevention, but this is how I think we can make up the gap, whether it be incorporate the volunteers and get them trained that they could help with inspections, things like that. Hiring a third party. If you've got technical rescues, how are we going to mitigate them? Bring in a third party. Response agreements with other fire departments who do provide the service, because a lot of those are very rarely happen. But at least if you have a response agreement with another department, at least something can be in place so that somebody will be responding. So that's part of the plan. And then I think they need to take the next step, make reference to NFPA 1300 to do with community risk reduction plans, and then start working on that through the guideline. I know that NFPA does have personnel in Canada that will help them in guiding them along the steps, not make the plan for them, but will help guide them as to what they need to look at and how they need to formulate the plan. So I think that's the finishing edge they need to do to make everything fall into place, is to complete the community risk reduction plan afterwards.
And, you know, fire chiefs are listening to this going, aha, but I've got so much to do already. But the reality is we can't get away from it, right? The risks are there. They have to be dealt with.
And I think some of this was brought forward by the OFM to reduce the number of fire fatalities in Ontario, because it's just too many. It's astounding the number of people that died in fires during the daytime. I don't understand that. Everybody's supposed to have a working smoke alarm. Obviously, they're not. There's a lot of residents that don't have them. So a lot of municipalities, such as volunteer departments, are having trouble getting staffing during the daytime. If they have a fire, they're having staffing shortages, so they don't have enough people to put the fire out. So what's the next step? Let's prevent the fire from occurring in the first place. So that's why the OFM's three lines of defense are making an appearance again, which they were years ago, as part of the CRA, that three lines of defense: public education, inspections and enforcement, and then the emergency response is the third line. The first two lines is where they want departments to start focusing more resources, because that's, I'm identifying in just about every fire department, is where they're lacking. Public education, they don't have a public life safety educator online or fire prevention officers that can do the inspections and enforce the fire code. That's where the biggest shortfalls are, because everybody's resources have been on the nice shiny fire trucks that make a lot of noise, that's where all the action is. Well, really, it's the people behind the scenes that need to be supported now, and they're not being. And one of the things that I am mentioning in some of the CRAs, depending on the municipality, is changing their name of fire prevention to fire prevention and community risk reduction. That tells a bigger picture of what their jobs are now evolving into, is they're supposed to start reducing the risks through inspections in their community. So it's really an interesting job to take on, to evaluate these and put these programs together. If a fire chief has not begun his CRA yet and they plan on doing it in-house, they will not complete it in a matter of days. It's going to take months, if not the better part of a year, to complete it. In fact, even the OFM has made mention that it could take a department that's doing their own up to a year to properly research and put one together. So better plan for it. And the infraction, the fines for not having one completed in time are rather staggering. And I would not want to be the one that goes to council and say, we've had our first charge from the OFM and our fine is $500,000. And if they didn't complete one after that and they get a second fine, that is $1.5 million. That would be very difficult to take to council and say, I blew it. And say we got a big fine. But I also find it that there'll be some leniency and from the OFM and allow them some leeway, but to a degree. If you've at least started it, they'll work with you. But if you haven't even made an effort, then they could come down rather harshly on you.
They've put some teeth to this legislation.
That's right.
Well, thank you, Rick. Really appreciate your information here. I know our listeners will be going, oh, we better get on this. or if we've already got it, let's open it up. So thank you for your time today. And thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. And hopefully it was a great assistance.
I'm positive our audience will find it of great assistance, Rick. And I want to echo Daryl's comments. Thanks for joining us on Conquering Chaos and Mayhem, sharing your insights with us today. And on behalf of our host, Daryl Cully, I'd like to thank our audience for listening to Conquering Chaos and Mayhem. We'll see you next episode.